Thanks. Hi, my name is Jerome. I'm known as Jerry to some. Jerry Jerome. I'm an alcoholic. Please let me see the truth. That's how my other group ends the set-aside prayer. It's the only rule up here. Don't lie. So, I'm a real alcoholic. I learned so when I had to go to AA meetings for a couple DUIs. Learned I was a drunk, gonna live fast, die young. I'm not gonna quit. I can't quit. I can quit, but I can't stay stopped. I have a sobriety problem, which leads to a life problem. And I lost my 20s thanks to drinking. A little recap from last week, which is a tough decade to write off. You know, other people partied like me, and they got up and went to work Monday and lived their lives, continued their plan to go to school and get educated, get a career, get a wife, have babies, and, you know, be normal. And I made the mistake. I was not only delusional about what alcohol was doing to me, I was delusional about, you know, I would compare instead of, you know, identify instead of compare. And, you know, if normal people can drink like that, I certainly can. And I just didn't care. It was all I knew. It started innocent enough, you know, got me out of my shell. Taller, braver, funnier. And I needed that. I was short and shy. And I had arrived. And there wasn't much trouble in the beginning. Until there was. And that's kind of like my story. And even in sobriety, things worked until they didn't. So I bottomed out 29, 30, 31 years old. I had blown off education to do whatever, be a laborer, be a bassist in a hardcore band. Dropped out of computer science in the 80s. Nowhere industry. And blamed booze for these bad decisions I was making, but nobody forced me to drink alcohol. Yeah, it's a disease, I can't help it. I can't stay stopped without a power greater than myself. But, you know, I did it to me. Nobody forced me to drink like I drank. I saw warning signs and ignored them. Part of that's delusion. And I tried to do adult things. I got married and had a child and went to work sometimes. You know, alcoholics interview well, they don't show up always or execute. And it was just kind of a spiraling down until I bottomed out in Brooklyn, building a house in Borough Park. And it was a sad ending, and I didn't know it was an ending. You know, in our book, this is the solution-based meetings, I'm going to talk a lot about steps and how I got familiar with them in our literature, primarily the big book. I mean, even on page 17 of the 12 and 12, and it's not the dis literature, it's just they're written for different things. Page 17, it says, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is our basic text, always will be. You know, that's where promise and prayers and warnings of how to get better are. It's 12 steps to grow a relationship with a power greater than myself that first helps me stay off booze, and then it helps me live life on life's terms, live successfully. So I learned a lot in here, and in the beginning it wasn't literature-based. It was fellowship, love you until I could love myself, which was nice. I learned that you could have a good time without drinking, which was incredible. And, you know, without a substance in me, I started doing things that I used to talk about. We'd be in a dreary bar or a beautiful day in a dreary bar, and we should go to the beach or go skiing or travel. Though we wouldn't. We would just talk about it. And I was pretty smart and didn't recognize how bad my life was getting. And it really depressed me to be responsible for a child and not be responsible. So in our book it says he wants to want to stop. And I feel like that describes me. I knew I could be doing better, but at this point I'm selfish and self-centered, delusional, which is dishonest. Got no God, so there's a lot of fear, although I think I'm macho. And y'all loved me when I came in here. So my plan was to come in for 2 weeks in November of 91, and I was 4 years old. And I was going to quit for 2 weeks and learn how to drink like a gentleman, just manage better. You know, the biggest delusion we face is, you know, life is terrible, and I used to wake up, sometimes I'd have a hair of the dog, and once I started, I couldn't stop. Like, I knew that. That's the only thing I knew coming into AA. But sometimes I was repulsed by the thought of drinking. It nauseated me. And I wasn't a puker, but, you know, I explained last week how at that point most mornings it was, and afternoons it was oozing out of my system. I'm definitely the real alcoholic they describe in our book, not the hard drinker or the teetotaler, you know. I'm the real deal. And I had other substances I ran to get out of me, but we're going to focus on the booze. Because I'm addicted to a non-addictive substance, which doesn't mean I'm any less addicted than an addict would be. But there's others that can drink with impunity. You know, I've lived with them, and you know, that's them. That's not my story. So anyway, 2 weeks turned into 30, 60, 90 days, and I saw it was possible to maybe live without booze for the first time in my life at 31 years old. And I did. We went to dances and to the diner after the meetings, and I started showing up for work, and my salary increased, but my relationships didn't improve much because I was bringing the alcoholic with me, the non-drinking, you know, untreated alcoholic, wherever I went. Just like geographics didn't help when I was under the influence, it brought me with me. They didn't help when I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. And that's something I wish to emphasize in here, because I had almost 16 years of substance-free living, like no mood-altering substances. And at the end, I was at that jumping-off place again, the bitter end, you know, ready to make the supreme sacrifice, which is death. When they say this is a vital and critical disease, they're not kidding. You know, it's vital if we do what we're supposed to do, life-giving, and critical, life-taking, if we don't. And I think that's an important part of my message, that I came in here to learn how to drink like a gentleman, learn how to live without booze. But it wasn't enough. Our book talks about a man is unthinking when he thinks sobriety is enough, you know. It's the primary goal when we come in here, to be substance free. But we're going to need more than that. And that's what this literature does for us. 12 steps help directly at, you know, addressing the problem. In our book, we have 4.5 chapters, preface, you know, forewords. And the forewords and preface and the doctor's opinion before chapter 1, Bill's story, they get into 1 and 12, you know, and for the next 4 chapters, they're going to talk about step 1, which happens out there. You know, my step 1 experience happened before I came into AA, but I didn't recognize it until I learned what that was all about. I knew 1/3 of it. There's 2 things before the dash, you know. I'm powerless over alcohol. I knew that once I started, I couldn't stop. I have a physical allergy. I didn't know it was like, I didn't call it a physical allergy, but I knew I was different in that once I started, I didn't want to stop, but I couldn't on the rare occasion I did want to stop. What I didn't fully understand was the mental obsession, you know, that I thought alcohol is my only problem. If alcohol is my only problem, how come I go back to it when I'm not under the influence? Like, that's an insane decision without being hindered by alcohol, you know? I'm going back to that thing that is injurious, as the doctor calls it. And I know it's injurious to me. I know it's getting worse, never better. I know it's not going to go away. And to me, abstinence and death are the same thing, so I'm not going to quit. So I learn about those two halves, you know, physical allergy, mental obsession. The mental obsession happens before I drink, and the allergy happens once I start. Then we have the dash, and we have a new thought, and my life is unmanageable. Well, that's fairly evident. You know, I had big plans for myself and ended up homeless for a year and a half in Brooklyn, so it's pretty unmanageable. I'm father of a five-year-old boy who needs me, and I can't show up for him. I have six brothers and sisters and parents, and friends are dropping off, but the few friends I have are disappointed at best. So while my first step experience happened out there, my education as to it happened in here, reading and going over the literature and hearing other people's experience with it. And we have to know the problem before we can solve it, right? And I love the fact that Bill Wilson, the primary author, gets into his story, first half, the calamity, second seven pages are, you know, heck, the 12 steps are defined in 13 and 14 in a couple paragraphs. He mentions the traditions that he doesn't write for another 12, 14 years. And he wrote the 12 and 12 after a great depression of his. And Dr. Bob would snide him a little bit, like, Bill, why don't you try working some of those steps you're so proud of? Because if I'm going to get depressed without a substance in me, this is not, I'm not talking to the chemically, you know, chronic or whatever. I have the same symptoms of somebody who's maybe bipolar or depressed or whatever, but alcohol's a depressant, and for me they were spurred on by that. They can continue if my God is too small. That's kind of what I've learned, you know. I shrink my God, my higher power, and I don't trust, and problems ensue, you know. Untreated alcoholism shows up, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontented, and I get angry again, and I'm a clenched fist at the world, and it's uncomfortable. And it happens, you know. I'm a human being that is going to make mistakes, and praise to a higher power that's in a dimension I'm unfamiliar with, in this fourth dimension we get rocketed into. But my education didn't start till 07, about this time of year, when I had tried everything else to be successful at living. You know, I got into my career, met a sober girl, had a couple sober babies, had some great career years. There was a void inside of me I couldn't fill with stuff. I was trying to get fulfilled with externals when it's an inside job. And I can't do that when I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism. Alcoholism doesn't just make me drink beyond my will. It changes me. I actually think I was born kind and intelligent and drank myself into a condition where I became selfish and self-centered and inconsiderate. Delusional, dishonest, a lot of fear. So I need to address that in the steps. And this book is incredible. Seems to be written for me. It's definitely written for us. Common peril, common solution. So I love the fact that Bill tells a story in chapter 2, gives us hope, and there is a solution, you know. And I identify more. And he weighs the carrot of there's a way out, you know. So we continue. I continue my education in Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Backing up a bit, before 07, I tried several things to grow along spiritual lines without reading the big book. And it worked till it didn't. Fellowship worked till it didn't. I'm not poo-pooing it. This is just my experience. I got involved with service work from years like 7 to 11 maybe. Those people didn't drink and I didn't. I learned some of the workings of general service and intergroup. And that worked till it didn't. I saw a shrink who lived around the corner from the big old house I bought prior to getting into the literature, and cars and shiny objects didn't solve my problem, especially if I worshipped them. Kind of ruined my second marriage with that. She wanted flowers. I said, you're getting thousands of dollars a week, plus I'm paying the mortgage, you buy the flowers. And I know, it's stupid. But that's what happened. So things worked till they didn't, and I mention that because when I got into this work and started studying the steps and living them and changed, and then got the privilege of bringing other people through the work, I arrived at a feast in a heaven haven. I had been in AA drinking water and eating bread, and there was a whole plethora of delicious life that I was missing out on because I was in my own way. My object today in Alcoholics Anonymous is to quit blocking that power that not only keeps me off booze, but it allows me to live successfully, which means I can forgive my enemies and I can admit when I'm wrong and try to amend that, and I can slowly change and improve. It's really the only instruction in this book, is to grow along spiritual lines. We don't talk about it a lot, but that's my main objective. Now that I've had a sprinkling of serenity, a byproduct and happiness of doing the next right thing, not worrying about my own well-being so much as what can I contribute to life, I want more of that. It's a little upsetting that I will sink back into the mire of untreated alcoholism. My first big book sponsor equated me in a way with Bill Wilson. What an honor. But the way he did it was not an honor, and I had to look it up because I was not familiar yet. I was getting divorced. I was in my first round of the work, and she left with the two kids. They were like 3 and 7 or 4 and 7 or something. And the career wasn't going so good. It was 07, 08. The whole world was taking a crap. It wasn't just me. And, I went and tried dumping some things on my big book sponsor. Now, he's not like my previous sponsors where we could dump and feel a little better. He's like, did you bring it to God? And he's like, I can't remember the quote. I should look it up. But he's like, I can't stand wallowing in the self-pity, it was a quote from Bill's story. That's how I was equated with Bill Wilson, and I'm like, not such an honor. I'm like, dude, did you hear what I said? My whole world's falling apart. I'm just as bad as I was a year ago before I started this BS. And he was like that. He was very militant and seemingly insensitive, but he was sensitive. He knew I was dying, and I didn't need a hug then. I felt I did. Actually, I dole out hugs a little more than he did, but to each their own, right? You do you. But I was wallowing in self-pity, quicksand all around me, and I couldn't handle, just like I knew I couldn't handle another drunk or another early sobriety, I couldn't handle another depression to that degree. And I learned the value of prayer, because in praying on it, it's all about what's God's will versus my will. If this was meant to be, it was meant to be. I'm going to paint the picture of that scenario, why it was so sad for me, because my wife was in the program. She had never taken a legal drink. She was 20 when she came in. She came in a little before me, but relapsed and stayed in February of 92. I never let her forget I had more time than her. But we both got into the work together for the first time in 07, 08. And part of my 4 through 9 was we had gone to this counselor around the corner, you know, this marriage AA counselor, and that's why I bought the house, because we had done that years before, and it was around the corner, like 20 miles from where we were from, so it was like a sign, right? And that didn't work. Whereas working the steps, you know, we had to learn to hold hands. We had to be affectionate in front of our children, which was kind of alien to us. We became parents, and we lost focus on ourselves. I don't want to get into marriage counseling here, but how the steps were involved with that is like part of my new truth was, you know, I still loved her, and my sponsor asked me to express that to her, and it was neat. I would like leave notes by the coffee pot or on my screensaver, on my laptop, and, you know, I love you and stuff like that. And I kind of fell in love with my wife again. And while she got a kick out of it and appreciated it, she was crying in divorce court, you know. We both were, because it was over and it was sad. But we knew we weren't doing the kids any good staying together, and it was heartbreaking, right? So I didn't want to hear that Bill Wilson quote. But I went to my God, and it wasn't meant to be, and she's married to a woman today, so, you know. I said to my next big book sponsor, isn't it worse? And he kept sidestepping it, and he's like, yeah, it's worse. But other friends said, look at it this way, you never could have pleased her, right? So, and we're both happy today. So, you know, in fellowship AA, there are two kinds of AA. There's solution-based and there's fellowship-based. And it's not to chastise either one of them. It takes all three sides of this triangle to stay sober. You know, the unity, we do what I can't do for myself. Recovers the cornerstone, as we talk about in meetings like this. It's 12 steps to a relationship with God. And we have to give back, not just in sponsorship, but not being a jerk to the world, being our best, and growing, and improving, and learning from our mistakes, and taking the high road. So, that ended. A lot of bad things happened that I'm not going to get into, except to point out that when I went to my sponsor with these darkness in seeking light, there was an answer to him. He said, those things are going to happen anyway, but now you're somewhat equipped to deal with them. And he was right again. You know? I didn't think about committing suicide. I didn't think about drinking. I thought about going to my God and my other father and saying, okay, all things for a reason, right? I got to learn another lesson. You know, most lessons have a price tag on it. Most are financial for me. And this one is an emotional one. And it wasn't meant to be. And we became better parents after that. And that was always our priority. You know. I had another long-term relationship after that. Again, I'm not getting into this. What's important is how the steps helped me. And everything happens, you know. There's a lot of life that goes on in our careers and in our homes. And that's where the trouble's going to ensue. That's where the things we're going to grow through and improve. And in hindsight, everything is as it's meant to be. I drank myself into a condition that I have this fear and this ego that's not even real, that tells me there's not enough time. I'm going to die before my time. There's not enough love. And I'll be alone. And I'll be broke. There's not enough money. You know, there's just not enough. And there is. You know, and 12 steps show me that maybe I need a smaller house. Or, you know, there was a time when my career was my higher power, and that didn't work. There was a time when my relationship was my higher power, and that didn't work. That the codependency and sickness. And I try not to philosophize in here, but the 12 steps as directed by this book are the only thing that's consistently worked for me for a path of growth. There's hiccups, there's ups and downs, that's living. But they're not as high and low as when I first came in, and there's learning experiences, and it's not what happens in here, it's how we deal with it, and this is where I get my coping skills. You know? And it's born out of desperation. It's born from doing the wrong thing. Some people praise my knowledge of this stuff, and I tell them, I'm not good with compliments anyway, but I say, think of how sick I am to have to know this stuff without cracking the book, because I've read it 1,000 times, hundreds with men, and I need it to survive. I need it to successfully live. And it's consistently held up its end of the bargain. I think consistency is a great word for what we lack and what we can grow toward. You know, I don't consistently show up when I'm active or untreated. I do when I'm recovered. You know, so I get over that mental obsession that happens before I drink. I never forget the fact that I'm physically different. I'll be celebrating 32 years in November, and I am still not immune to, I'm still an alcoholic in the physical sense that if I start, I'm not going to stop. But now that I have the knowledge of that, the mental obsession doesn't come into play, you know, because I know the truth. The truth is very important, which is why our inventory process is essential. It starts with the resentment, number one offender, killing more alcoholics than booze, you know. And it gets me through that and showing how I play a part in that resentment, you know, and that it's affecting me in the third column, and that I have to let it go and forgive to be right again. And it gets into fear. Human, my God's too small, I've got no solution. Because of those, I cause harms in the bedroom and otherwise. And that is my sponsor's business, because if I'm a jerk in the bedroom, I'm likewise elsewhere. Now that I'm equipped with the truth, share with my sponsor in the fifth, and he identifies patterns. In the first 3 steps, we get rid of old ideas. We cast everything out. I'm going to be reborn into a whole new way. This isn't working. I'm going to try something new. Gift of desperation. And I see patterns. How I'm selfish and self-seeking. How I manipulate. How I hold on to anger and turn it into resentment, getting worse, never better, and that it turns can be lethal. That my depressions can be lethal, my anxiety. They're not just a normal worry about paying the mortgage. They're psychotic. And that gives me objectionable character defects in 6 and 7 to work on the rest of my life. And that leads me to leaving the safety of his condo and going out there and clearing the wreckage of the past in the 8th and 9th. Learning the power of willingness. I'm going to need to know that, because my sponsees, if they're not willing, they're wasting my time, and we don't do that in here. He told me there's a line of guys, 40 guys behind the guy I'm working with, or the guys I'm working with, and if they're not willing, you know, it's hurting somebody else. When he sat me down, we made a commitment not to waste each other's time, that I would do what he said, and until I was halfway through 9, and then he would clear me for sponsorship and he would listen to me. I personally listen to everyone, because I never know where my lessons are going to come from. So, the 9th step. Wow, another atomic bomb. I think 4 and 9 are our big ones. That's where we lose people, and because it's hard. It's hard to get to our truths, to admit, to take that high road, admit when we were wrong, and just focus on our part. But it works. You know, that's how the resentment leaves. And now that's going to get exponentially greater as I go out to the other side of the street and clear the wreckage of the past. And I got 2 wreckages. I got stuff I did when I was drunk that I had an excuse for. And I got stuff I did as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, as a sober, supposedly sober guy, sobriety, that was not so easy. But I think I mentioned last week, the harder the the amends process, the more impactful it is. I think every challenge I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, the joy of getting through it and growing through it and learning from it and trying not to repeat surpassed the difficulties of my warranted or unwarranted fear, right? Fancied or real, they call it, that someone's harming me. There's a book by Chuck C., Richard Chamberlain's dad, and it's called A New Pair of Glasses, and I learned in here to change my perspective. You know, a lot of it's just my outlook. Drinking all that booze kind of clouded my reality. And being the center of my universe and playing God clouds my reality. And I'm not equipped. I can't do it that way. So, it all comes slamming home in the ninth. And I didn't have the courage to do all my amends, and we have to do them all. We have to work on all our character defects. This is, you know, in Christianity, God sent his, I know we don't do that in here, but he sent his son down so we could have a realization, a little glimpse of what that fourth dimension looks like, and he could have our experience, and good orderly direction doesn't care what you call it. I learned from the voices in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used nature as my higher power, and AA didn't chastise me for it. There's no rule about that. The deal is that we have to stop playing God and trust in that power. You know, I wasn't supposed to get sober. I couldn't. It was impossible. Nobody is, and yet we're a couple million strong. That's not a human deal. The professional who worked with 50,000 drunks, Dr. Silkworth, did not have the success rate that we had in our pioneering early years. Using that higher power through these 12 steps. Got to get to truth in 4. We got a clean house in 9. Putting out of our mind entirely the harms of others. We talk about what we've done. How can I make it right? Some of them say, how did that make you feel? And my sponsor didn't buy into that. It made him feel like crap. He stole the money. Or whatever. So God gave me the courage to go finish my amends process, and I experienced another. I got closer to him, you know, and I started trusting more. It wasn't the magic of getting on my knees and giving my life and will over to the care of something bigger than me. It was the magic of taking action. Chapter 6, 7 steps and, I don't know, 16 pages or something. 5 through 11. How does it get better? That's why these meetings are great. This is, we all know how we got in here. I want to go to a meeting and learn how I can keep growing, how I can get better. And that's what my big book meetings do. I go back to fellowship-based meetings I'm instructed to, and I'm like, I really don't like them. But if the message isn't there, I'm instructed, create the fellowship you crave, bring it. You know, I can mention how 12 steps got me to a relationship better, bigger than myself, and led me to a better life in 30 seconds. Or I can do this for a step a week for 12 weeks, whatever. You know, I'm familiar, and it's just my experience. And a lot of that's doing it wrong. Half of my sobriety, I did it not wrong. I mean, I didn't pick up. That was the goal. But I didn't grow. And that's just speeding up death, right? So I clean house, and halfway through I get cleared to work with others. He literally had me go to the, you know, the clubhouse or whatever. And raise my hand. I'm Jerry Jerome, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been cleared to work with other guys. Did not like that. And I'm scared because, you know, people die in and out of these rooms. There's big bookers that commit suicide, you know. We're we're a little too rigid when it gets that bad. But God's not in charge when that happens, right? And look, I'm not so curious. I used to want to know the answer to all these things. I'm going to figure it out when I leave this realm. And I believe in other realms. And I'm not in a hurry to die anymore. So I got a little less curious. But yeah, I got cleared for sponsorship. And I'll tell you, all the things I learned in here, I had these great aha moments in my inventory, and I found out I had this overindulgent sense of self-entitlement, the world owes me, I'm a victim, blah, blah, blah. And it just wasn't true. You know, I played a part in everything that happened. It wasn't all my fault, but in here I learned that, you know, it's not what happens, it's what we do about it. And if I'm untreated or active, I'm clueless, befuddled. Even our book says we don't have the answer to some of this, you know? Why do we drink the way we drink? Why can't we stop, you know? And it's ignorance to think we can do it for her or for the job or, you know, because we're real alcoholics. Hard drinkers can decide not to do that. Our only decision has to be something bigger than me has to come in here because I can't do it alone. So, continuing 10. So I used that word four times, I think, in the first paragraph. It's only four paragraphs. After the 10-step promises, which talks about being free from booze. I've read that to newcomers. You know, it just happens. About being safe and protected, the 10-step promises, you know. We reacted as if from a hot flame, you know. That's the miracle. It just happens. We don't want to drink anymore. Like, I went from can't stop to it has been removed. You know, that's our experience. That's the way it is. What a great way to share. That's just what happened. I couldn't stop, and now the obsession has been removed. We are neither cocky or afraid. What a great philosophy to go through life with. I bring it into a batter's box or on a ball field. You know, I'm not better than or less than. God lessens my fear, and I'm just going to do the best I can. I use it in life. I'm neither cocky or afraid. I live between that. I appreciate the now instead of regretting the past or fearing the future. And I get that by continuing. And 10-step is a promptly. That's the operative word in the step. When we're wrong, promptly admit it. I'm human. When this happens, it's going to happen. It doesn't even make it to my nightly review, which is step 11. I know when I'm doing wrong. And if I don't know, then I'm slipping back into untreated alcoholism or agnosticism again, and I can't afford that. I've had a taste of the good life. I've seen the light. I want to stay there. So, continue, pretty easy. But I'm an undisciplined lot, and that's where step 11 comes in, and they call it strengthening my relationship, growing my relationship. Not improving and increasing my faith, but deepening my relationship with my higher power, making sure he stays in charge because I wake up in me. That's not good. So upon awakening, prior to coffee, I get on my knees. What's your will? Give me the strength to carry that out. So important to pray rightly. You can see it doesn't work to give God your wish list like he's Santa Claus. You can easily see why the book says it's not so easy. It's disguised for me, you know. But when I think back on my past experience, I can't drive this ship, you know. Like, he's got to be in charge. They say acceptance is the answer. Well, how do you accept? Well, because God's in charge, you know. What's your will and give me the strength to carry that out? What's the next best thing to do? Based on truth, what would love do? Pause when agitated or indecisive, you know? We get like that. Pause. Don't reach for the gun. You know? Take a breath. Am I going to die over this? Guy cut me off. Am I going to die? No. Should I kill him? Maybe. Untreated. Untreated will give you a maybe. Get you reaching for that bazooka. What would love do? Go ahead, bud. We'll get there. Try not to kill anybody. When we retire at night, constructive nightly review. tells us not, it warns us not to, well, look, I come in here ashamed, I'm a drunk, I'm irresponsible, I've hurt people, I'm done beating myself up by the 11th step, you know? That's not what my loving Father wants of me. He wants to live the best life I can, so I constructively look at, was I kind and loving to all? Could I have done something better? Do I owe an amends? That seems unsurmountable in the beginning, but it's not that hard when you start living rightly. You know? I used to write these questions down. Now I just take a minute and think about it. Man, was I a jerk today? Why? What's bothering me? Am I taking charge? Yes. Less God, more Jerry. Problems ensue. So we do that constructive nightly review to help the fact that I'm undisciplined. And now that I have a relationship and a new life, I want to share that with those that suffer from active or untreated alcoholism. That's a challenge of my own. I'm not equipped to do that. I'm afraid. People die. I've been to so many funerals. I don't want to be responsible for that. But my experience shows that I've been reborn into a life where I can be, where I can live successfully. That booze is only the least of my troubles anymore, you know? I am my trouble still, I'll get in my way. But once I know a way through that, the great thing about sponsorship is I hate hypocrisy. I'm not going to ask somebody to do something I'm not doing. And I get these aha moments when I ask them to write or reflect or whatever, work some steps. I see where I'm lacking, you know, and I jump on it and I do it with them. And I grow. And I sit across from my kitchen table and I watch these dead eyes wake up like mine did. And I watch them come back to society. You know, I couldn't get somebody to speak at one of my home groups. I have like three now. It's not recommended. It's burning me out. But everyone's up at this general service convention at the Doubletree, and I couldn't make it this year. It was so crazy. And Chris Raymer was speaking in Pennsylvania, and whatever. I consider him a friend. And, more an acquaintance. But I couldn't get people to share at my home group. And the thought came to me after a prayer that to call this guy I haven't seen in years. And sure enough, he just celebrated 11 years and I had sponsored him in the beginning. And it was so nice in a not so crowded room to hear this man's story and almost to come to tears. Like I didn't know. All I did was introduce him to God and talk about my relationship with God. But he got it, you know. And I don't know what my record is in working with guys. But when you have, I've gone to meetings and hear ex-sponsees share just coincidentally, I just run into them. And it, you know, I have to be careful with ego here but I don't do the work. You know, I don't kill anybody and I don't save lives. I just introduce them through my experience to their higher power, and then their life gets like incredible, and those dead eyes are alive, and he's sponsoring five guys now, and he's Hispanic, he's teaching in English and Spanish, and he owns a restaurant, and it became his life, you know, this 12-stepping deal, and I was just so moved by that. Like, I always feel like I'm on the right path and I gotta trust my intuition. That's where God talks to me. But that's also where the devil talks to me, so I have to be careful. But, you know, you get those. I was a little down. I'm trying to do some business tweaking and it's major. It's a little scary. Gotta bring my God with me. And, you know, I kind of needed a win. And it was, you know, him showing up and his son came up from out of country, who he had an estranged relationship with when we were working together. And his son was 3 years sober and speaking the same night that he spoke. And he gave him a ride there and he came to me an hour later and he'd go pick him up. And he was me, you know. He was running around doing AA and his family was benefiting. And he has a great life. And again, I didn't do that. That's not ego. That's That's the power of doing the next right thing, and it was straight out of the book. He wasn't one of my fellowship sponsees. He got the real deal. There's also the other side of nine. You know, I've heard some nine-step amends that, and I don't want to go over this week, that show you the power of God. This couple is deceased now, so I'm going to tell their story, and he gave me permission anyway. Just quick, I'm going to booger it, but I had a guy, I had about 19 years, and I was a couple years in the book. He had 27 years, and I was pretty egoic about working with guys back then, I got to admit. I wanted a guy with time, you know. And ironically, since then, I've gotten people with time because they identify with the untreated alcoholism. And it's not important. Back then, I'm just admitting that Anyway, this guy was doing the work, and he would not clean house. He was married almost 50 years, and she knew his deal. He's sober 27, half their relationship, and he would not come clean as to some things that maybe should be attacked from the flank, let's call it, you know, stuff. She knew he was in a wild, in a roundabout sort of way, but I was asking him in a ninth, and I didn't instruct him to get specific, just to do it, you know, like, say a prayer and admit your faults and don't give names and see what happens. We drove a half hour to a meeting and a half hour home, and he wouldn't do it. I'm like, so he calls me a couple days later and he said, Mary passed. And I was like, oh Christ. And we're both crying, and he's like, it's a good thing I changed my mind and made amends to her before she went. Because he got free and she got free. And his saddest moment when he was so happy, you know. And it wasn't that bad. As we find out, we just need the courage. And we don't have the courage to bring our God. I don't have the courage to sponsor men. I don't know what the next right thing is to do. I constantly need my God to show me. So I continue to experience miracles as these so-called losers become winners. I get that name from when I made my first amends to my 37-year-old tomorrow. When I went to his school in Boston, and I thought it was going to be a dinner out, a piece of cake. And he's like, you traded off being a drunken loser to inviting drunken losers over to our home weekly, nightly. And I said, look, they're not losers. We lose stuff. We lose wives, keys, homes. But we're not losers. We're children of God that make mistakes, and we're owned by a substance, and there's a way out, and I'm just trying to help. Now he needs that help. So of my own, I'm not equipped to speak here. I'm not equipped to sponsor. But I have a relationship with a power greater than myself that allows me to do that. And he's pretty good at it. And I make mistakes and I learn from them. I love the story of the guy who gets a flat tire 200 miles from nowhere in Arizona. And untreated, he's pissed off. And in recovery, he puts his feet on the dashboard and says, okay, God, curious as to why you brought me here. You know? And I've had that reaction to life. My knee-jerk reaction is, where's my bazooka? But I got to pause and ask, why am I here? And it's always for a reason. I got arrested when I was behind on child support 2 weeks. Like three times, lost my license. It was ridiculous. Never go through the state. And I grabbed my big book and I went into the cell. And I had the money. It was like $3,000 behind. And I asked the sponsee to come over. And the cop's like, help me arrange it. And he's like, what's his last name? And I'm like, I don't know. Which, I don't care. My last name's Larson. If we're to be of maximum service, we got to, just let me into the hospital, see my friend, you know, I've known him 12 years, blah, blah, blah. I'm like a family member. What's his last name? I don't know. You know, so we're going to need that. Anyway, he's like, you're going to send a guy, you give him your debit card, go to your, and you don't even know his last name. I'm like, yeah, I trust him. The cop actually made me wonder for a second. But he came back with the cash, and I'd only known him a couple months. Like, that's what we develop in here. We're family, you know? You can trust. My God's at his helm and my helm, and if it wasn't meant to be, then I got my big book. I'm going to jail. I'm going to sponsor guys in there. I just don't care. You know, I wasn't rooting for that, but that's the acceptance we get to make the best of the situation. And that's close to an hour. I've shared enough. You can ask me any questions you want to go about it. I do want to mention that the 12th step is, the steps are cyclical. They lead to, you know, recognizing the same in the prospect that I am. They're me, and they recognize that I had no hope at one time. That's why we tell what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. I'm a real alcoholic. If they identify with that and they're willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, then there's a chance of success. And it's not through the work and done. It's like now, you know, my greatest shame has become a gift where they're going to know that I'm me, but, you know, I'm them, but I'm different. And that they can be different too, with God in charge through the 12 steps as directed by our literature. Thanks for letting me share.